It's the end. The end of the path I started us on.
Nothing lasts forever.
We Got the Geek is recorded before a live studio audience.
All right, it's Jace 2. We're coming to you from the Geekery, and I'm actually here with a bunch of people right now.
It's a party.
I have Agent Daryl with me.
Hey, hey.
I have Sarah with me.
Hello.
I'm not sure if they'll talk, but Case 2 and Diane are here, too.
I am here, but we're playing Jenga.
They are here to add sound effects and comments from the peanut gallery. Yeah.
So,
we get peanuts? Come on. We have peanuts.
So this is a welcome to the return of Make My Marvel Movies, which a year since we did the last one.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to make this this yearly tradition, a proud annual an annual custom.
Well, if we can keep this going a little more recent, Terry wants to come back and do so.
For sure. Yes, the Maple Maiden herself.
Yes. So, the last time we did one of these was the big announcement of all their movies up to 2019, I guess.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks after the announcement that I finally got a chance to sit down with you. Almost exactly a year ago today.
At your place.
Well, this is my birthday, so a year ago next week. That long ago, my goodness. Yeah, we had just covered the announcements. And I think maybe we had done a little bit of Guardians of the Galaxy discussion because it was just coming out on DVD at that
and
point.
And we had just watched a couple clips from the then-upcoming Age of Ultron. The whole
Ultron,
hammer, trying to lift the hammer party scene.
Yeah, right, yeah, the after-party scene. Hence, hence the working title of the movie. Yeah, I think we might have even probably discussed a little bit of speculation about Daredevil. There was definitely Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. But a whole long year has passed since that time, and a whole lot of new stuff has come up to be talked about.
Yeah.
So apologies to the listeners. Yeah, we haven't been on this, but stay. Still lots to talk about and catch up on.
Yeah. So we haven't even reviewed Age of Ultron or Ant-Man. We'll get to that in a minute. But
we're pretty much, yeah, exactly. I mean, Agent Carter. So many things that have happened in 2015.
So I'm going to bring this up to you just because you're wearing the shirt to start it off. Doctor Strange started filming.
I am in hog heaven. All the set photos and casting news and just about anything Doctor Strange related right now. I'm loving every minute of it.
How do you feel about Benedict Cumberbatch?
I'm not too familiar with his body of work. I saw Star Trek Into Darkness. That's probably my best introduction to the character.
Me too.
Maybe a few other things. I haven't watched Sherlock.
I have.
So
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock fan, so
you need to watch Sherlock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Now.
Okay. The doctor has written my prescription. So, yeah, I'll probably catch up with Sherlock. I think it's on Netflix, so I'm sure I'll pass the time once I get caught up with my Avengers cartoons. They released the new season of Avengers, and it's all Thanos and Infinity Gems, and I'm loving it. It's great. The Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon, not so much. I want to like it, but it's just not so...
Dan and I have watched a little bit of that.
It's not grabbing me. And I'm enjoying some of the Spider-Man Web Warriors issues. I think the episodes, I think they're mostly a retread of what's already been aired since last year, but Squirrel Girl's in a couple of issues and episodes.
That's right.
Totally stoked about that. Anything with more Squirrel Girl, I'm happy.
Cool. And I guess, rumor has it, we're going to be getting a Civil War trailer fairly soon.
I think it's supposed to play in front of Star Wars.
Really?
That makes sense. It's all Disney. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. I mean, it'll be worth going to see, Star Wars and a Civil War trailer for Captain America. It's going to be a lot better than going to see Fantastic Four and seeing a butchered Deadpool trailer, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, you saw that in the theater, didn't you?
I took the time on a cheap Tuesday to go catch a matinee of Fantastic Four. I figured, I'm not going to be able to complain about this movie unless it pays my monies and, takes my chances. Just like election time, if you don't vote, you don't have the right to complain afterwards. So I voted with my dollars. And And I have complained quite vocally since. It was a disappointment. I knew it was going to be. I went in with very low expectations.
Have you seen it, Sarah?
Mm-mm.
You know what?
I don't know if I want to, I might give it a shot.
I'll say this. Up until they start doing superhero stuff in that movie, I didn't mind it.
You know, there are moments when it's okay. I you know, there were times about a year ago when I was like, you know, this could be Fox's Guardians of the Galaxy if they play it right. Clearly they didn't want to do that, though, because it stunk to high heaven from beginning to end to me, particularly the second half, though, of having been meddled with by studio executives who just, frankly, I think they sabotaged it to ensure that it failed. Who knows? I mean, who knows what wheels are going on behind the scenes in these corporate boardrooms and things, but there's been rumors that Fantastic Four may actually be sold back to Marvel Studios, although now I'm hearing that it's probably not the case, because Fox wants to go forward with a couple of X-Men TV shows, which seems pretty smart, since the franchise is actually getting revitalized now. But apparently they've had the rights to that all along, and they've just been picking their moment, and there's been no trade-off between Marvel and Fox for any sort of properties. So Fantastic Four is still at home at Fox Studios, and last I heard, they're still pursuing another sequel, so who knows? Who knows? Sometimes the sequels can be better than the originals. Not always. Definitely the case with the Captain America movies, but that was still a pretty good movie to start with, and the sequel was just the best of the Marvel sequels.
Yeah.
I think of all the Marvel franchises that have had more than one movie so far, Iron Man 2 was not as big as not as good as Iron Man 1, I think.
No.
The Thor movies have been kind of tepid all throughout. I enjoy them.
Oh, no, see, I think they've been great.
They're great, but I think there really hasn't been anything like Winter Soldier was. It was just a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was the true follow-up to Avengers, whereas Iron Man 3 and Thor 2 were kind of, you know, they were lukewarm entries. I enjoyed them, you know, Infinity Gems and things and mysteries all about throughout. But they didn't just grab me like Winter Soldier did. And that's really been the sequel that has been the strongest following an original entry like Iron Man. Thor, even the Avengers, to the Avengers sequel, you know. I will elaborate at length about my displeasure about Age of Ultron, but not as strong as the first movie. Cap seems to be the only one so far that has successfully pulled off a sequel better than the original. We'll see if Guardians does. I'm actually kind of worried about Guardians 2 now. In the wake of Avengers 2, it's like, are they gonna mess it up? See if they can make it too hokey. I hope not. I prefer a more sophisticated, I don't know, the action and the sophistication and just the stakes that were what was at stake in Winter Soldier, I thought, was what made it such a great movie. And fantastic performances as well. Jenga.
I guess we should bring this up, too. Like, since we last talked, Marvel's going to start putting out Spider-Man movies.
We talked about how the event from last year, the announcement with all the forthcoming movies, and all that information, almost every single aspect of that information has in some way, either major or subtle, been changed.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe the first early movies. But the funny thing is that they were changing aspects of the announcement during the announcement. If you remember, there was the Serpent Society was the working title for Captain America 3. And then by the end of the announcement, they changed it to Civil War. And I think that was actually a deliberate move. I think they did that on purpose to demonstrate that changes happen. And that even from the beginning of the announcement to the end, their changes can occur. So as these things continue to roll out, expect more changes. And I think that was what was subtextually done there, to just say, just because we're announcing all this does not mean that it's cast in stone, it's not ironclad. Changes could happen, and of course, in one short year, we've seen major changes.
I tell you, I could care less about this Spider-Man movie.
I'm excited for the Spider-Man movie, not so much because it's a Spider-Man movie, but because all of those Spider-Man-related characters can now mingle in the Marvel Universe. And I think that's what's more exciting for me.
Well, yeah.
It's a Spider-Man movie, but you know there's more than likely going to be some other Marvel hero that is going to be in the movie. And that's what's got me excited, is the potential for crossover.
Yeah.
Hopefully something like Doctor Strange, which would be perfect, because they're both Ditko creations. And there was a mention of Doctor Strange, if you remember, in the second Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
When they were trying to figure out a name for Dr. Octopus. And Sam Raimi's brother there.
I remember that, yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson's personal assistant or whatever. Proposed Doctor Strange, because that's already taken. So it was already, so there was an implication actually, as far back as what, 2005?
Four or five? Earlier than that, I think, too. I think 2002.
Well, 2002 was when the first Spider-Man movie came out.
Oh, that's right.
So there was that, they implied that Doctor Strange was part of the Spider-Man universe, part of the Sony Spider-Man universe back then in what, 2004 or 5 when Spidey 2 came out. Of course, now we know that he's definitely a Marvel Studios character. It's being filmed now, which makes me happy. Happy. But, lots of changes in the announcement. Ant-Man and Wasp, following the relative success for that particular franchise of Ant-Man. It's nice to see that Wasp is going to be, looks like she's going to be the official first character to have, female character to have her character in the movie title.
Yeah.
It's going to be pushing out Captain Marvel by just a little bit.
Thank you.
But hey, good for the Wasp. That means more Evangeline Lilly, and now she's actually going to be in the suit, and that's good news, because that's, well, as we get into our Ant-Man coverage there, we'll talk about what was left to our expectations at the end of the movie.
Yeah, definitely. So in addition to Ant-Man and the Wasp, I guess they've announced two or three mystery movies?
Yeah, there's these untitled movies that are going to take place after Inhumans, or possibly instead of Inhumans.
Yeah.
There's been talk, I think, of Marvel TV has been sort of playing the Inhumans card a little heavy this past year.
Yeah.
And so they might not do the Inhumans movie, but they haven't featured any of the royal family, which is what readers of Inhumans would be most familiar with.
Yeah.
Black Bolt, Medusa, Triton.
Lockjaw.
Oh, man, I can't wait until I see Lockjaw. Ever since I saw that dog at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy, the holographic dog.
Oh, yeah.
It's going through the ruins. I still think that is like the Inhuman city of Adelgan, which can traverse from different parts of the world or different worlds entirely, different planets. It is an actual an interstellar craft. So I'm hoping that what we see there at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy is our first tease of Inhumans. Because there's a dog on an alien planet. And where do you see alien dogs all that much? Well, except for Lockjaw.
Sure.
This isn't the DC Universe, so we know it's not Krypto.
No, darn it.
What would you think if Black Widow ever finally got a solo movie?
That'd be interesting. She's gotten a lot of FaceTime in the movies that she's been in. She got a lot of coverage in Avengers Age of Ultron. And
Iron Man.
She was a major supporting character in Cap 2.
I always said, okay, if she can't handle a movie on her own, why not do a Black Widow and Hawkeye movie?
Hawkeye, well, I mean, that could be, that's possible, that could be one of the unnamed movies coming up.
Yeah.
Especially with a team-up like that, because now we've got Ant-Man and Wasp, so now it's not just about single characters.
Do a Black Widow and Hawkeye movie.
Now there could be like these character dynamics where you could take two different characters and run with them.
Yeah.
And yeah, those are two characters that haven't gotten a movie themselves. Hawkeye was very not around for Phase 2. Of course, now we find out it was because he was off conceiving Nathaniel Pietro Barton.
Busy
doing his own thing.
What are your thoughts on the announcement that Hulk's going to be in Thor Ragnarok?
Is that official?
Yeah, that's official.
Good.
Yeah.
Do we know what kind of Hulk?
No, just that
green Hulk. Is it going to be a slightly gray Hulk? Like we sort of got teased during the Hulkbuster scene in Age of Ultron.
Not sure, it is Ruffalo though coming in for
We've got Thunderbolt Ross coming back in Civil War, so I'm hoping that there might be a tease for a red Hulk.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
There's never been a Rick Jones character in the cinema.
No, there hasn't, actually.
I guess an A-bomb is not something that we'll see anytime soon.
No.
Or maybe they'll introduce a Rick Jones. Captain Marvel's coming out soon, and he doesn't really have much to do with Carol Danvers, but Rick Jones and Captain Marvel.
He was mad.
I mean, he is as much a Captain Marvel supporting character as he is a Hulk supporting character.
Captain America,
as much
too.
As he is a Captain America supporting character in the early years. Yeah. Of Captain America. Avengers, I mean, yeah. Rick Jones was kind of the Coulson of the 60s. He was the glue that brought them all together. An important character that doesn't get enough face time, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
And has yet to be introduced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So who knows? Maybe Mark Ruffalo's out there making friends with a future Rick Jones right now. Because he dumped Black Widow's ass. Quite harshly, too.
That was brutal.
Oh,
throw me down a well and tell me you adore me.
All right, why don't we take our first break, and when we come back, I know we got to hear your thoughts on Avengers Age of Ultron.
I got some thoughts.
All right, we'll be back after these commercial messages.
Now, a word from our sponsors.
Sketchbook Comics and Games is a store that has something awesome for everyone. In addition to selling comics, board games, and action figures, there are tables for open gaming. Wednesday nights, Sketchbook features game night starting at 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday, Sketchbook is the place to be for Magic the Gathering. The store is located at 224 Glenridge Avenue, Unit 9 in St. Catharines. Come on down for all your geek and comic book needs.
It's not about saving our world. It's about saving theirs. Scott, I need you to be the Ant-Man.
Huh.
One question. Is it too late to change the name?
All right, we're back. We're here at the Geekery doing another segment. 12 months later of Make Mine Marvel Movies.
Yes, call it 2015 a year in review, I suppose.
Sure. So we had Daryl and Sarah here. And we haven't, you know, one of the things about We Got the Geek is we used to do reviews all the time, and this year we just kind of concentrated on interviews.
For myself personally, it was a very active con season, although I think I only got about 3 or 4, but
yeah.
Guys, not a weekend went by almost to have something happen.
Yeah. So, I guess we should give our official review of Age of Ultron. Now, first of all, Daryl, let me tell you this. Sarah, tell Daryl how many times you saw the first Avengers in the theater.
10 times.
10 times.
Doubles my record for 5 times seeing Phantom Menace. Actually, I think I saw it about 7 times. I saw it 5 times opening day in the first 24 hours.
Wait, which one was that?
Very busy day. Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Back in 99. I had a lot of time on my hands.
That's the opposite of your Phantom Menace story.
Yeah, we won't discuss that Phantom Menace story at all.
But Age of Ultron, I know last year at this time you were super stoked for this movie, and as we all were.
You know, we all enjoyed the first Avengers movie, obviously.
Oh, loved
it. One was made. I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan outside of that movie, and yet there are devotees to the Whedonverse, I suppose. Angel, Buffy, I mean,
Firefly,
High Ride, Dollhouse, all of that stuff. I tried getting into Firefly. I couldn't get past that opening music. Yep. Space Cowboys, no thanks. Just couldn't get into it. Maybe if I actually gave it a chance, I'd be able to get into more. I do want to check out Dollhouse one of these days, because what with the whole AI and robotics, and, you know, what with the Vision, I'm sure there's probably some interesting connections there. And action. No, Age of Ultron is probably the first Marvel movie in a while where I wasn't compelled to go back and see it again. I left the theater going, okay, that was a Marvel movie, but I didn't want to run right back in and watch it again. And even watching it on Blu-ray since it's been released, it's kind of a chore. I hate to say it, but it's kind of like, I think it's the first, it's the weakest Marvel movie since Incredible Hulk.
Really?
Which still to me, I mean, as great a movie as it is on standalone in the greater Marvel Universe, it's still kind of the redheaded stepchild. Where none of the actors from that movie have come back and reprised their roles, at least up till now. So maybe that will bring some connection to the Incredible Hulk movie. Because
I forget, Stark was in that too, in a cameo.
Kind of, but only him. He's the only one. Because there was the Ruffalo recasting. There was already a recasting, when you think about it, from Eric Bana to Edward Norton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of the Hulk movies have had this sort of disjointed feeling.
Yeah.
And yet, if you were to clean them up, re-edit them, even sort of special editionize them or something, you could take Ang Lee's Hulk and incorporate it into the Marvel fold. If you really wanted to, because I mean, it took place 5 years before the second Hulk movie, which was exactly 5 years later. So I mean, it's basically just a sort of a different universe's origin to the Hulk. It was the origin story for the Hulk, something that thankfully they haven't felt the need to go back and recover again and again and again, like Spider-Man, or not so much the Punisher, but I guess there's going to be that. I really hope they don't. I hope they don't scrap Iron Fist for a Punisher series. I don't. I mean, I'm not against a Punisher series, but not at the expense of something that's already been announced.
So, was there anything you actually liked about Age of Ultron?
There were a few things that I liked. There were moments. There were certain details. I mean, the biggest beef for me is definitely that one scene in Seoul, Korea, when they're doing the cradle robbing scene, basically, and Cap and Ultron are on the top of the truck. Ultron knocks Cap off the front of the truck, and as he sort of spins around to the side of the cab, there's a freeze frame. You see what looks like, frankly, to me, it looked like one of Hawkeye's arrows going right into Cap's chest. Just for a split second, you know, watching on the Blu-ray, freeze framing, see what I'm talking about. And it's actually the support harness that that Chris Evans was wearing, and that they had failed to digitally edit out of that one frame.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So it just really takes you out of the moment in that moment. Because for half a second, you're like, did Hawkeye just shoot Cap in the chest? Because it's only sort of partially edited out. Obviously, somebody dropped the ball and phoned it in or whatever. But it actually, the way the harness is sort of half edited out, it looks like an arrow going right into Cap's chest. Maybe that's deliberate. I don't know. Maybe that says something about Cap's fate. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much. I just thought it was a bad effect that took me out of the moment of the movie. And for the rest of the movie, to be honest, it was just like millions of dollars, and I couldn't fix that one little thing. Unless there's a purpose for it, in which case, maybe we'll see.
I gotta tell you, I was disappointed at the end when the helicarrier showed up. I was hoping Coulson was gonna finally be revealed as still being alive.
If not Coulson, then somebody else from Coulson's team, so that at least there would be that connection. You got Maria Hill, you got the guy from the launch sequence, the Houston Ground Zero thing there from Winter Soldier, the guy who Crossbones had the gun against his head. And it was nice to see him come back. But the helicarrier itself is kind of shoehorned into the back end of the movie there. The crossover with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. felt forced.
Oh, geez, I'm just telling Sarah about that.
Listening to Edward James Olmos talk about Ultron as if this had been going on for more than just the past week. It felt phony. Again, it took me out of the moment more than bringing me in. It felt forced. I don't know. I mean, as much as I loved the first half of the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the second half, once Daisy was revealed to be an Inhuman and everything, I don't know. The whole Inhuman thing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I was never a big fan of them. The fact that they're just sort of using them as the Marvel Cinematic Universe's mutants makes sense, obviously, but I'm just like, I don't know. It's lazy origin stories for all these characters that you just want to balloon up and blow up into your universe when there's so many cool origin stories that you have yet to be told. And it's the telling of these origin stories that give you these great stories. Just somebody eating some fish oil capsule and then getting powers.
Yeah. All right. Better Quicksilver, Days of Future Past, or Age of Ultron?
Well, I'd go with the one that's still living.
Yeah.
Who's faster? The one who outran the bullet.
The one who wasn't Hawkeye.
The one who was actually moving the bullets. Who was smart enough to move the bullets out of the target's way instead of just running in front of the bullet. The target's way. I'm sure Marvel Universe Quicksilver wishes that he had a little time in a bottle so that he could nice. Go back and...
Nicely done, sir. And I'll tell you this. I kind of like that they gave Hawkeye more to do in this movie.
This was really Hawkeye's movie, and understandably so. Expectedly so, I would say. So he had no presence at all in the other Phase 2 movies at all.
Yes.
Absolutely nothing. Where is Hawkeye? There's Hawkeye. He's off making a family. He's fixing the sunroom. He's blowing out the dining room wall and fixing up the house. He's out there living a normal life because that's what he is. He's a regular guy.
Yeah.
With an amazing sense of accuracy. And he's not a monster. He's not a superhero. He's just a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. He's not even on the books with his family and stuff. One of the few S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that has a family. Because it's always been sort of implied up at this point that S.H.I.E.L.D. agents don't have family. That's the reason they're S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, because they have nothing to distract them from the mission. Nothing more important than the mission. So why does Hawkeye have a family? Other than the fact that Ultimate Hawkeye in the comic book had a family and they're just putting it in there? I don't know. Some people say that the family will eventually be killed off, and that will be a spark point for some kind of, maybe some sort of vengeance drama for Hawkeye or something, where he's really going to, the character is really going to come out to the fore because of something like that. But who knows, really? I don't know. It was one of those things where you didn't see it coming, and that was kind of cool. But at the same time, it was like, well, what's the point? Other than to ground these heroes in a real place, which was at the same time not a real place because it was as far removed from anything going on in the Marvel Universe as going to Asgard or going to, Tony's Malibu mansion. I mean, it's just completely removed. It's this farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere. There's no going into town for supplies or anything like that. Who knows where this place is? It's wherever it is, I guess, upstate someplace. It's never really said where the house is, where the Barton residence is. I don't know. It felt a little disjointed, but that was my big problem with Ultron, is that there were all these disjointed moments. It didn't really seem to gel from beginning to end. Some of it felt forced, and maybe that's studio execs deciding, this has to be in there. I think it was played to a much younger audience than, say, something like Winter Soldier, which would be appreciated by a more sophisticated mind because it is a more sophisticated story.
Well, here's the thing with me. I love that all the Marvel movies have some sort of humor in them, but it seemed like they were trying to go too jokey with this one.
It was the dialogue I found. And I've said this so many times in the past. Over the past year, people have got tired of listening to me say it was written for 8-year-olds and the parents of 8-year-olds. Every line in the movie felt to me like just like this bad double entendre, sort of punny quip. You've got language, of course, right out of the bat there. I mean, that's something that every parent says to their child, and it's kind of funny. At the end of the movie there, when the whole Sokovia thing, Iron Man and his get in the tub, and I thought it was something that a parent would yell at their child. And of course, that's to be expected because it's the subject matter of the movie as well. I mean, Ultron is Tony Stark's child. Vision is sort of the product of Ultron, which is the product of Tony Stark. So there is that, passing it on to another generation, or something that was something before is now something different, like Jarvis to Vision, dropping the jar, putting the eye on the end there. Still got the VIS, though.
So. By the way, I dug the Vision in this.
I love the Vision. That's one of the things that saves it for me, is the fact that the Vision was so great, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. And there's that little tease. There's those little teases where you can see a bit of a blossoming relationship already, just in, the way they regard each other between Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Especially now that she feels so vulnerable, having just lost her brother.
Yeah.
She's going to reach out for some comfort somewhere else. Who will it be? Pretty obvious that it would be the person who came into her life at just about almost the exact same moment that her brother went out of her life. Speaking of the death of Quicksilver, I watched the DVD commentary featuring Joss Whedon for Age of Ultron, which makes it a little bit more watchable. You can forgive some things. I thought it was kind of interesting. During that exact scene where I had that beef with the harness is exactly the moment when he starts talking about how all these different visual effects houses are responsible for all the effects in the movie. And it almost felt like a subtle... He was making an excuse for this one little flub that had happened. Because he realized it. He noticed it because, Jesus, if I can notice it, surely the director of this film would notice it. So maybe he noticed it after the fact, whatever. But I just thought it was very compelling that he mentions all these different houses who are responsible for different visual effects just at that moment in the movie. So it was almost his way of sort of explaining that, okay, so if everything doesn't quite match up from scene to scene, you have to understand that there's a lot of people, there's a lot of cooks spoiling this broth.
Yes.
But one of the things that I did like about the movie that he mentions in the audio commentary is at the beginning of the movie during Tony Stark's vision, so to speak, dream sequence, when Scarlet Witch causes him to start seeing hallucinations. He sees the death of the Avengers, that great scene where the Hulk looks like a dying buffalo with all the spears in him, which is exactly how Joss Whedon describes it, the dying buffalo. But he calls attention to Cap's shield and the way that the shield is broken is a very specific shape to the break in Cap's shield. And he says, watch at the end of the movie when Scarlet Witch pulls Ultron's quote-unquote heart. And what she says, if you want to know how it felt like this, and then she pulls Ultron's image out. And he actually points out that the shape of the tear in his chest perfectly matches the shape in the tear in Captain America's shield. So there's a bit of an Easter egg there, I think. And he doesn't get into, he doesn't elaborate beyond that, but I think it actually is a confirmation that we will probably see an Infinity Gem embedded inside Cap's shield. And that this tear that is shown that matches this tear from Ultron, because Scarlet Witch causes something within Ultron to come out, and that's what causes that tear. So if that same tear is shown on Cap's indestructible shield, then it would stand to reason that perhaps even Scarlet Witch would be responsible for the drawing out of whatever it is that's embedded inside the shield. What could be embedded inside the shield? My guess is the time gem, which is associated with the 10 rings that have been throughout the Iron Man movies. You know me. I've been talking about this for the better part of a year and a half now. You know about my color theory.
Yeah.
When it comes to Infinity Gems, I just love to start seeing them everywhere. And I do. I see them in everything. It's like God's little design. And it makes perfect sense because the 10 rings, I mean, there have been distinctive shapes for all of the Infinity Gems up to now, or the containers of the Infinity Gems, if you prefer. You've got the Cosmic Cube and the Tesseract. You've got the Orb from Guardians of the Galaxy. You've got the Ether, which is a liquid form, but I'm certain that once compressed down, could be like a diamond, could be compressed into a solid gem. What else have we gotten so far? Oh, of course, the Mind Stone, of course, from Loki's scepter. And there's the theory that each of the containers, the name of each of the containers, or the states in which the Infinity Gems are when they've been introduced, each make up a letter of Thanos' name. I think I said I was going to call that one of the Infinity Gems was going to be referred to as the Nexus. And it's funny that in Age of Ultron, they actually refer to a Nexus being the heart of the Internet. And that's where Tony Stark goes. And when you see that scene, which is going on juxtaposed along the same scenes as Thor's Hot Tub Time Machine ride, which, again, another part from Age of Ultron that I'm just like... okay, I know you want to guys get these guys' shirts off so that you can have all these half shots for the ladies going to see these movies. But really, Thor just grabs Stellan Skarsgård and goes off and goes hot tubbing. It's the weirdest. It was, again, a disjointed scene in the movie that makes no sense and just goes off and it just makes no sense at all. Took me right out of the movie. But during that hot tub scene, Iron Man is off in this Nexus. And, of course, that's when he discovered that Jarvis is still, in some form, still alive. And he brings him back, and I'm decrypting nuclear codes, and you don't want me to. But, yeah, it's called the Nexus. And that's why I think that Nexus is going to tie in at some point with even the look of Jarvis when you saw that 3D model of his sort of globular form there. It was the color orange, which brings to mind... the orange time gem from the Infinity Stones. The time gem, which I think, because Tony Stark is a futurist, that falls into, like, why is he able to predict things with such great accuracy unless he is maybe even unconsciously tapping into the mind gem's ability to see the future, or to at least anticipate what to expect in the future. There is talk, if you recall, in Iron Man 3 and I guess maybe in All Hail the King, of the Master's traveling. And the Master is... It is assumed that the Master is referring to the Mandarin. My suspicion is that the Master is actually a reference to the Master Ring. A ring that, if there's 10 of them, then perhaps there's 9 rings. And if you'll pardon the Lord of the Ringsian expression, one ring to rule them all. And there has been a Lord of the Rings reference in Avengers. Better clench up, Legolas.
Oh, yes.
And that was Iron Man saying that. And there are rings upon rings upon rings when you look at Iron Man. The landing platform at the top of Stark Tower, before it was Avengers Tower, when he lands and Loki's standing over there looking at him, that whole thing that comes around and pulls his armor off is one big giant gold ring.
Yeah.
And he lands on a gold ring and then it sort of comes out and does all that. There's rings, rings, rings everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the true Mandarin is Tony Stark. I've been saying this for ages now. The true Mandarin is Tony Stark. Imagine that. Imagine if he's like Tyler Durden and he's got a second personality who he's completely unaware of. And that, who knows, maybe his, I don't know. It gets very cerebral after that, and then you kind of lose it, and then you sort of lose touch with the reality of a fictional universe. But yeah, that's always been my theory, is that Tony Stark himself is the man, the Iron Man, if you like.
All right, I'm gonna pause you right there, Daryl. We're going to take another commercial break.
Smoke coming out of my ears. I'm speculating so hard.
Talk a little bit more about Avengers. We got to get to some Ant-Man talk as well.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll be right back.
Hold on, true believers. There's more We Got the Geek after these words.
Mostly Comics has been serving the Niagara region for over 30 years. The store sells a variety of comics and entertainment-related products, including graphic novels, toys, and collectibles. Mostly also purchases rare comics upon appraisal. Visit Kim and the Gang at 413 St. Paul Street in St. Catharines, or check out their website at www.mostlycomics.com.
Whosoever, be he worthy, you shall have of the power. Whatever, man. It's a trick.
No, it is much more than that, my friend.
If I lift it, do I get to rule Asgard?
Yes, of course.
I will be fair but firmly cruel. Be right back.
Am I even pulling?
Are you on my team?
Just represent. Pull.
All right, let's go.
Come on, Cap.
Nothing.
Oh, no, that's not a question I need answered.
The handle's imprinted. Whosoever is carrying Thor's fingerprints is, I think, the literal translation.
Yes, well, that's a very interesting theory. I have a simpler one. You're all not worthy.
All right, we're back. We're doing, finally, another edition of Make Mine Marvel Movies, Daryl and Sarah, and talking a little bit about Age of Ultron, and definitely not Avengers 1.
Well, no, I think it fell short of the expectations as a follow-up. For me personally, I honestly, even in the DVD commentary of Age of Ultron, Joss Whedon sort of says, I don't know why I took on another Avengers movie. It is such a huge undertaking. And I think he was almost kind of confessing that it might have been a little bit too much for him, and maybe that's why it ended up being not so great. Who knows? The next Avengers movie is going to be directed by the Russo brothers.
Yeah,
maybe the fact that there is two and it's a team, and they're two brothers who are very much in sync.
They've been Winter Soldier too, right?
They did that. They're doing the next. They're doing Civil War, and then they're doing. They're basically covering the wars after this. Civil War, and then the two Infinity War parts. So,
cool.
But you know, maybe having two directors who work in good, synchronicity with one another, maybe that'll be just enough so that they'll be able to share the load with Frodo and Sam. And get that ring to Mount Doom.
All right, so Daryl.
No more ring talk for me.
If you had to give this movie a review, I
would give it my lowest.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't hate it as much as you. Oh. Wow. I was going to maybe give it
as
7.
As opposed to the traditional 12.
I'd probably give it 7 dead Quicksilvers out of 10.
Oh. Look, you didn't see that coming?
Okay. Sarah?
God, they really set up the death.
I have nothing witty to come up with for a scale.
All right. On the other hand,
if I were to give it a rating, I don't know.
Two middle fingers up?
I wouldn't be that.
I didn't hate it. I certainly didn't like it as much as the first.
No.
And I thought it was a little too jokey.
Exactly. I mean, I do like the humor, and of course, it's not to say that humor in a Marvel movie is a bad thing. We're about to start talking about Ant-Man, and let's face it, that one was real. If you ask me, I was busting the gut throughout the entire movie and loving every minute of it.
Yeah.
But I think it's the humor and who it's directed to. Because there's different kinds of humor, and there's different people who are going to respond to different kinds of humor. This one was dumbed down for a younger audience, obviously. It's not your daddy's Avengers. In which case, I would suggest sticking with the Captain America movies.
Oh, how about the Stan Lee cameo, though?
Did love that one, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Any Stan cameo of any sort is always great. Big Hero 6 was a great one.
Yeah. Thor, my favorite.
Was a very small and subtle one.
Yeah.
But again, some of that great humor in Ant-Man. Managed to slip him in there right at the end.
Let's get to Ant-Man, actually. Because year ago, we were all concerned, not sure how this movie was going to turn out.
Edgar Wright had walked away from the project. It looked like the thing was going to be a train wreck.
It recast a bunch of people at the last minute.
Including the director, exactly. It looked like, oh my God, this is going to be the train wreck of 2015. And as it turns out, it was the strongest Marvel movie by either Marvel Studios or Marvel licenses to Fox or whatever, out of all of them, out of 2015, of the three Marvel movies, Ant-Man, Age of Ultron, and Fantastic Four, I'd say it was head and shoulders above the rest.
So I was right on board at the beginning with Paul Rudd being cast as Ant-Man, because I'm a big Rudd fan.
I love the Ruddler.
Yeah.
Ever since as far back as Clueless. And of course, you know, one of my favorite movies is 200 Cigarettes.
I love them in Anchorman.
Brian Fantano.
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet.
40% of the time. It works every time.
Yeah.
Friends. Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So lovably stupid.
Yes.
That was great. You know, Ant-Man versus Star-Lord.
That's right. So I went into this movie really not expecting too much.
I don't think any of us did.
No.
And it was kind of like, and for a lot of us, especially knowing comics origins and things like that, in the comics, Hank Pym, who is Ant-Man, created Ultron. So how does this make sense if the Ant-Man movie is coming out, 2 months after an Ultron movie? And we're like, where's the connection? It turns out none that we know of so far. But at least they were able to put them close enough together so that, you know, if you kind of blur your eyes, it looks like it all came out of the wash. But yeah, Hank Pym, Michael Douglas. How amazing was that?
It was good.
I love the now, and as I get talking about it, of course, I start remembering. It's been months since I saw Ant-Man.
Well, we just watched it this week.
You just watched it, so that's definitely bringing it back to the fore too. But just that opening scene, the flashback scene with Peggy, John Slattery as Howard Stark. So great to see him back, first time since Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
And proving that it's not just Dominic Cooper who's going to play the role now. They're going to embrace all the actors who have portrayed Howard Stark. That was awesome. And, of course, you know, the guy who ended up being the Hydra agent, the name escapes me right
now.
It's been too many months. But, yeah, that whole scene there was great. You know, it's just like the early or maybe the mid-stage, well after Agent Carter, well before the beginning of Iron Man, somewhere in the middle of the 80s there, the late 80s, there was stuff going on. And, of course, throughout the course of the movie, we see that the Wasp was Hank Pym. Keith's wife, and that she was tragically lost in a freak pin particle accident, which probably leaves it open to her possibly being brought back into the Marvel Universe. They talk about this quantum realm, which I think is going to tie in very closely to Doctor Strange. I think there's been a lot of talk of quantum physics being related to the magic of Doctor Strange, and this mention of a quantum realm, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some connection there. And then there's the mystery of who that shadowy silhouetted figure was right at the end there when Scott was shrinking down into the quantum realm.
Yeah.
Which kind of also reminded me of, because it's all very geometric shapes and things like that, it reminded me of when Star-Lord took hold of the Infinity Gem at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, and then you could kind of see something going on in the background there while he's reaching out to the ghost of his mother. And who knows, all this stuff, the different dimensions, different planes of reality, this is something that's definitely going to be explored in the next year with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was our first look into a dimension other than what we've seen so far.
I think compared to Age of Ultron, this movie had a lot of heart.
Which, you know, unfortunately, the Tin Man did not have. If you want to get your Oz references there.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. If Ultron is the Tin Man, then he was definitely without art.
But as a dad, like, I was totally on his side about wanting to be with his daughter and everything.
It was very much a daddy-daughter movie.
Yeah. And you love the kid, too.
And in two different ways, too.
The kid with the, I hope you don't catch him.
Oh, Cassie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The future young adventure known as Stature.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool because, I mean, she's an actual, there's an important character in the Ant-Man mythos.
Yes.
Scott Lang's daughter. Is the motivation for what he does. There was a few other characters, too, I think, important to the Ant-Man universe. And, of course, then there's the all new characters. Louise, is it?
Yeah, he was new.
Oh, man, that was just... I mean, that was the best part, was his storytelling. The whole Ocean's 11 sort of heist angle there.
I mean, I know a guy.
The best scenes, yeah. Exactly, that after credit scene.
Oh, my God.
Getting to that. Yeah, I guess at this point it's all spoilerific. So, you know, if you're listening, yeah, you better have gotten boned up on all this because we're talking about it.
There is a spoilerish scene at the end which leads right into Civil War.
Yeah, well, which is actually footage lifted from Civil War that they just decided to put at the end of Ant-Man. I'm kind of curious as to what the other end cap scene would have been before they decided to go with the end credit scene that they did. The mid-credit scene was a great one, though, too, of course.
Oh, with the Wasp costume for Avengers.
It shows that the Wasp is going to be coming, hopefully, as soon as Civil War. But now, definitely, in the Ant-Man sequel, Ant-Man and Wasp. Let's see now. Yeah, Hank Pym, Pym Particles. One of the best scenes in the model of, was it Cross Industries?
And, where he was running across it?
The very subtle Zoolander reference that was made because of the center for ants, if you remember Zoolander. And that was my favorite scene in the anime, because even though they didn't overtly say it, everybody was thinking it. Anybody who's ever seen Zoolander was looking at that model of the building and going, what is this, the center for ants? And, of course, that just makes it all the more, you know, beautiful because it's a movie for ants. And I think, actually, there's the soundtrack listing, and that particular track in the movie is referred to as the Center for Ants. So there is that overt reference to Zoolander, which Paul Rudd was not in, but, of course, his, you know, co-star Will Ferrell was, as you got to. So there's, by way of Anchorman, there's a bit of a, you know, a 1 degree of separation.
Well, you know, he did have a hand in the script, so maybe he did.
I'm sure Adam McKay put it in there because he's a comedian. Of course, yeah, he was involved with a lot of those types of movies with Paul Rudd. I'm sure it was deliberately put in there as a reference to Zoolander.
Yeah.
The other great subtle reference was the appearance of Garrett Morris.
Yes.
I know him best as Earl from Two Broke Girls. Because of his Ant-Man sketch back in the 70s on SNL, which, who remembers that? I never. I
had to look it up.
It was a couple days after Ant-Man came out, and I was just like, yeah, I remember seeing him in the movie, but I didn't know the significance until I saw the clip from SNL. And I was like, that's great. I love that they paid that close attention and that they contact these people and they say, we want you to be in this movie, even if it's just for like, I mean, it was as good as a Stan Lee cameo, really, because and with far more meaning and impact if you're a big, if you're such a dedicated super fan of Ant-Man, you're going to know about that sketch and seeing him, you're going to know why he's there.
First mention of Spider-Man in a Marvel movie, too.
Oblique reference of Spider-Man. But the something about a web or something.
Guy who can
like
climb walls.
Yeah, guy who can climb walls. Yeah. Something about, I think there was something about a web, or there was some visual cue about something about Spider-Web. Very subtle, probably because they couldn't definitively say whether or not it was going to happen. So put it in there, and if it works, then it does. You know, you keep it. If it's too subtle, then you know, get rid of it. Or if it's going to happen, and the people believe that it's going to happen, then they'll believe that it's going to happen. And they'll believe that it was in there intentionally for that. Who knows? They could have said a whole bunch of different lines, and then just gone with that one. You know, just like, okay, we'll take that one because the Spider-Man thing worked. Like I said, it looked like this deal's been going in the works for a long time now. The Sony logo was very prominently displayed in Guardians of the Galaxy with the Walkman. The Disney logo was very prominently displayed in the Times Square scene in Amazing Spider-Man 2, the Disney store logo. So it seems to me like these were little concessions and deals that were being made to bridge some kind of agreement between the two franchises. And, of course, ultimately now we know that Spider-Man is coming to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
A new Spider-Man entirely.
Yeah. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's do our final segment. Still have some stuff to talk about in regards to Ant-Man.
Still, if you are, actually, yeah, there is a couple of things I want to talk about.
All right.
For sure, yeah.
We'll be right back. Excelsior.
Hold on, true believers. There's more We Got the Geek after these words.
Looking for a new comic book reading experience? Found it. Studio Comics. Led by Alfonso Espinoz, Studio Comics has a variety of talented artists and writers bringing tales of crystal skulls, circus freaks, and misunderstood superheroes. Check out their website at studiocomics.com. That's studio, C-O-M-I-X.com. And you can purchase their comics at better comic book shops near you.
Before the Avengers, before S.H.I.E.L.D., there was
Miss Carter.
Mr. Jarvis.
The original Marvel team is back.
Excellent.
For a new adventure.
This case is much larger than we initially thought.
On a new coast.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
California is going to go to hell in a handbasket.
Marvel's Agent Carter, two-hour premiere event, January 5th on ABC.
All right, we're back with Make Mine Marvel Movies with Daryl and Sarah. Something we didn't get to touch upon earlier with Age of Ultron, which kind of fits in with Ant-Man. By the end of Age of Ultron, we have a new team, pretty much.
There's a new team entirely. And, of course, another important thing to mention is the crossover between Age of Ultron and Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And the appearance of the Falcon and the upstate base.
And now the Falcon is definitely a member of the team now, as well as War Machine and the Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Vision and Scarlet Witch. It's been announced pretty definitively that Ant-Man will be joining the team in Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, which brings me to the great scene between Falcon and Ant-Man.
Well, that was a great fight scene. Don't tell Cap, though. Yeah, that was a funny fight scene showing that Ant-Man is able to hold his own against at least a new Avenger.
And, dude, my favorite line in the whole movie, "Hi, I'm Scott." Did he just take off his mask and say, "Hi, I'm Scott"?
I don't remember that, actually.
Right when he introduces himself to the Falcon.
Oh, okay.
Like, so, first of all, big fan.
Yeah. Not much in the way of keeping a low profile and trying to remain anonymous.
Oh, it was great. The whole scene was great.
It was like a tryout scene.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much essentially what it's going to end up.
And, the upstate
great
base that they showed in Ant-Man 2. Like, as soon as he flies over it, they start playing the theme from the Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that you know exactly what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But if you'd seen Age of Ultron, you would have recognized the layout of this base immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would love to freeze frame some of those scenes and see if the Asgardian Bifrost burn is still in the lawn.
That
would be a nice little detail if they included that.
He's not a fan of lawn maintenance.
No regard for lawn care.
Lawn care, yeah.
Which wow, what a line that resonates with me. And again, it's something that a child would hear their parents say. You know, a dad who really loves his lawn would say something like that about his neighbor. And somebody who just recovered about a foot of his property from the neighbor. I know exactly. Just spent about $50 in sod in the last month to fix up all this strip that's been ripped up. So, yeah, if you're listening out there, jerk, yeah, I got your number. I don't expect him to be, though. He doesn't strike me as a Marvel fan. No. That's enough of my personal problems, though. Yeah.
You know what? The special effects in this movie were actually pretty decent.
They were. Yeah, that whole the tub scene is great.
Yes.
I mean, and I was kind of surprised that there wasn't some kind of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids reference, because it is a Disney-financed movie, so yeah. And they're all about their synergy and stuff. I know that Rick Moranis is pretty much retired from acting.
Yeah.
So there's not much chance of him showing up in something like that, but it would have been cool if there would have been some kind of Honey, I Shrunk the Ant-Man sort of thing. Who knows? Maybe that'll be Cassie in the second one. Maybe there will be a reference to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids when Cassie accidentally gets shrunk. Because obviously, being stature, she is, at some point, we would hope, would have some sort of exposure to the Pym particles herself.
Yeah.
Probably something similar to the Man in the Anthill scene that we saw when he was basically the Ant-Man montage there where he's going through the keyhole. That was a great scene, too.
That was a fantastic scene.
The keyhole is just a fantastic.
And
he's able to do that at a run.
And him just growing again whenever the ants would scare him under the ground?
Yeah. He's all stuck in there in
that was scarier a minute ago.
Again, that's very physical comedy. That works because it's like, what else would happen if you were to suddenly grow big while you were in an anthill? You would expand right there into the soil itself.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a dancing baby goose sort of thing, too. It's kind of planted there. Maybe, who knows? Maybe that was a deliberate sort of, maybe not. Yeah, the wasp burns her wings by the end, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's the ICBM that they're trying to stop in that flashback scene is so Cap and Bucky from the comics. I mean, like, you can't not notice that. Especially since they ditched that and went to the train instead in the first Cap movie. So it's nice that was kind of brought back and sort of retooled for a different character. And maybe that even says something about what to expect from Winter Soldier and his interactions down the line. Maybe that has something to do with Wasp. I would love to see, you know, the Elder Wasp return through some sort of... If the quantum realm is outside of time, then you may not age while you're there. How exactly Paul Rudd got back in the same time, you know, without aging or being or whatever. It gets a little confusing after that. But hey, he managed to get up there because he went down and he got big again and he saved the day and hurrah! And Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, and the giant ant who becomes their pet.
Yes, I hope we get to see more of that. Because what's up with that? There's this giant ant running around. There's that creature running around chasing birds at the end of Thor. There are monsters loose on Earth now. Why is Coulson and his S.H.I.E.L.D. team not investigating these things? How are they not aware of this? You know, at least it mentioned that there's been talk of, like, sightings of a giant ant somewhere in the San Francisco area. That would be kind of nice if they just threw that into the show instead of all this hackneyed, shoehorned Ultron talk.
Yeah. And you know, I was surprised by Michael Douglas in this movie, too.
He was great.
And I'm sorry, dude, he looks like old Daryl in this movie.
Old man Daryl.
Old Daryl.
Well, yeah, okay, he's got the glasses, he's got the hair, he's got the beard. It's me, maybe in about 10, 15 years. Yeah. I'm pretty gray. I've got so gray the past year. Turning into the Silver Surfer myself.
Oh, sir.
So let's see. Anything else to talk about in Ant-Man? I think I covered everything. It's kind of sporadic for me because it comes in these little blurts, you know, Baskin and Robbins.
Oh, yeah. They'll get you every time.
Yeah, exactly. Baskin and Robbins knows.
But you just saw it for the first time this week, Sarah. Yeah. What did you think?
I thought it was great. I really liked the casting and just the way that the jokes played out and the action played out and the physical humor played out. It was just, it was good.
It's one of my favorite Marvel movies.
Definitely one of the funniest.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is, I mean, when you think of the humor that Robert Downey Jr. has brought to all of the movies he's been in, Chris Pratt and a lot of Guardians, there's a lot of humor in that.
Yeah.
Which I think surprised a lot. Because, I don't know, a lot of people, I know I was a little worried that it was just going to be another Green Lantern or something, where it's a cosmic setting that just doesn't feel real.
And, yeah.
Doesn't work, but it was everything that I hoped it to be in there. Yeah. So yeah, humor is definitely something that seems to be really finding itself way, you know, at home in the Marvel universe as opposed to the DC universe, which is all let's destroy half of Metropolis and, you know, Superman breaks Zod's neck and
it's
all gloomy and super depressing and
dark.
Well, I think we can all agree that Ant-Man was antastic.
Oh,
antastic. I can't argue with that.
Dude, we have 5 minutes left. We haven't even talked about Agent Carter yet.
Well, so I mean,
a year ago it was still on the rise.
Exactly. We're looking forward to it. I think we had an interview at Mostly Comics, and you were saying, were you looking forward to Agent Carter? Of course I was.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite characters.
And season one was great. Did you
season
watch
one was great?
Yes. I've got my Agent Carter.
Got my Agent Carter Funko. She's one of my favorites.
I will say it was better watching it all in one viewing.
Yes.
Except, yeah.
I mean, I taped them all, so I watched them.
Yeah.
Again and again and again. But yeah, definitely, especially once I got onto Netflix and was able to get the U.S. on block and then find Agent Carter somewhere out there in the wilds of Europe and watch them all in a row. And I said, no commercials. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Netflix is the
one. It was great.
Yeah, Netflix, you know, I mean, I got Netflix for Daredevil and it has changed my life. And now I can't wait for Jessica Jones. And
I like the fact Agent Carter was a short season, too. I played out better that way.
Yeah, because it just sort of filled the break between the first and the second halves of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is nice because it sort of, it's a breather, but it keeps you plugged into the Marvel Universe in some fashion.
Yeah.
I'm a big Cap fan, so anything, and especially I'm a big Golden Age Marvel fan. I have been for decades. Anything before 1961 in the Marvel Universe, I've always found fascinating. So, yeah, portions of Ant-Man, which, of course, I think Hank Pym's first appearance actually predates Fantastic Four. Or is right around
by a little bit of time, yeah.
So, I mean, we're really reaching back into Marvel's history with these characters. And, you know, having Agent Carter at the beginning of Ant-Man was nice, too, because it shows that, you know, wow. I mean, like, she's everywhere.
Yeah.
Haley Atwell, she's in Age of Ultron, she's in Ant-Man, she's in Agent Carter. She was in a couple of episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Those were great appearances.
Yeah.
With the Howling Commandos.
Oh, she's a great actress, too.
Oh, so nice to see those. And then the Howling Commandos showing up again in an episode of Agent Carter.
And, dude, first appearance of Edwin Jarvis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The man, the AI, the myth, the one true Edwin Jarvis.
Yeah.
First appearance, or would you count that whatever was in the background of the Agent Carter one-shot? I'm pretty sure there was a butler back there.
Okay.
Technically, I'm pretty sure that was a Jarvis, but maybe not. Maybe it was one of the second butlers. Who knows how many Howard Stark has?
Yeah. It was a great little series, man. I can't wait for season two.
Season two, taking place in L.A. this time, so coast to coast.
They confirmed Red Foreman himself, Kurtwood Smith.
Yep, Clarence Boddicker from RoboCop. We can't wait to see
that's cool.
What he pulls out. I don't really know anything else about season two. Really, I haven't really said too much.
I don't think.
I'm kind of going into that one sight unseen, but I know I'm going to love it, so I'm not worried. Yeah, I absolutely love the first season. You know, more. And any golden age heroes that they want to, you know, really dust off or bring out, that's what I'd love to see. Some of those lesser known, the Liberty Legion, the Invaders, of course.
Toro.
The Toro, well.
The Whizzer.
You know what? The Whizzer wouldn't surprise me at all, considering we've had Quicksilver, so I wouldn't be surprised if we had another Speedster maybe sometime in the past. Maybe even some connections, because we had... how up-to-date are you with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Do you know about Strucker's son?
Yeah, he just showed up.
So you know that...
By the way, Strucker's son?
Wolfgang Strucker.
Yeah, Bruce Willis's son from Unbreakable. That's who that kid is.
Is that who that is?
Yeah.
Wow.
I looked him up because he looked familiar to me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I believe that. I've seen Unbreakable enough times. He did seem familiar to me, but of course that's a little kid compared to what he is now.
I'm three behind right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are three very important issues. There are episodes that you need to watch.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're already planning another episode, maybe for December, because Terry from the Geekery wants to take part in it. She's a huge Marvel fan, and we're going to get it. We'll save it for the next episode, but you and her have some great theories about Peggy.
Should I bring it up now?
We're out of time, sir.
Okay. Well,
so,
one to grow on then, but yeah.
Let's not wait a year.
Let's not wait a year, but I definitely have some. There is definitely an important question or an important. I have put forth a theory that could only be proven in one particular way that we've all seen.
And by the next time, by the time we do a next episode in December, we should have seen Jessica Jones by then, too.
Oh, well, of course, yes. I will have devoured the entire series probably twice by that time.
Okay.
It's coming out in the 20th, less than a week away.
Yeah.
By the 21st, I'm going to have most of it under my belt. So.
Dude, it was great doing one of these again.
It's been too long, but you know, we had a great summer with all the interviews, so it's not like we were out of touch or anything. We had a lot on our plate. We had a lot to talk about. We had creators and people involved in conventions and every level of comic book industry.
And I'm grateful for that, too.
Hey, you know what? Thank you so much.
Dude, thanks for being a part of it. You're a team member.
If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been able to go to Fan Expo. If I hadn't been able to go to Fan Expo, I wouldn't have seen Tim Seeley again, a good friend of mine from years past. Yeah.
Ty Templeton signed your jacket.
Ty Templeton, that was a great deal. I got Tim Seeley to sign my Hackslash number one. I mean, and what, not a month later, the announcement of the TV show comes out, and the value of that book just exploded. And I've got a signed copy, so thank you. You know, I wouldn't have that.
No problem, man. You're like
you inviting me along.
I consider you a team member, and thanks for helping us out at all the different events.
I am always happy to hang out with the team, whether they are vocal or not.
All right, man. And Sarah, thanks for sitting in. And
My first time, so. Yeah.
Well, it was fun. We've got an interview with you coming up on the show, too.
Yes, you do.
All right. So thanks for listening, True Believers, and we'll see you next time with Make Mine Marvel Movies.
Face Front, Excelsior.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.